is Iconic, with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host JM, and with me today is Nick.
Hey.
This is a bonus episode brought to you by Petrie's Family Games of Colorado Springs. You can check them out locally or on the web at petriesgames.com. So Petrie's Family Games has asked us to do some bonus episodes for them where we talk about other products besides 13th Age, doing some reviews of board games or role-playing games. And today we're covering all of the new Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition product that's currently available. So the starter set, we'll touch a little bit on the basic set, the player's handbook, and then the first of the Tyranny of Dragons adventures.
So, JM, I am a new-ish role player, and I have watched some D&D 4th edition games.
Okay.
I have played a little bit of D&D playtest version of 5th edition. And I have read the 5th edition player's handbook.
Okay.
So I feel like I have no history, no baggage at all coming into this product.
Okay.
But I know that this is near and dear to a lot of people's hearts.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say start out when they were trying to, when Wizards of the Coast was coming up with 5th edition, what sort of obstacles did they have to overcome in making a good product?
Well,
in your opinion.
In my opinion? All right. So as if you have participated in any online discussions about role-playing games in the last 5 years, you've probably heard the term edition wars thrown about. After Wizards went from 3.5 to 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, Paizo took the open gaming license and made Pathfinder. And either you were happy with 4th edition, which seems to be the minority, even though our group loved it, or you were very angry about 4th edition and ran into the waiting arms of Paizo's Pathfinder and catapulted them into the lead, one of the lead sellers of role-playing game material. So the people behind 4th edition, they tried a lot of different things to bring people back. I don't know anything about the politics or the design behind it, but it really felt like 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, well, it made a lot of great advancements, and again, our group has, I think I've run 3 or 4 year-long or greater 4th edition games. I don't think Wizards went into it expecting people to cleave to 3.5 as tightly as they did. I think they were just expecting a repeat of 1st to 2nd and 2nd to 3rd and 3rd to 3.5, and we're Dungeons & Dragons and we're just going to make 4th edition. People are going to like all of our changes and move forward. You can find a lot of discussions and a lot of theories online. We're not going to talk about those because that's all before 5e. With 5th edition, one of the things that they really had stated as one of their design goals was to make a Dungeons & Dragons that felt like Dungeons & Dragons. Whether you played advanced, whether you played 2nd or 3rd or 4th, this was going to be the game that was inclusive as opposed to exclusive. It was a very hefty design goal because if you do even a cursory glance, there's a lot of very similar threads between all of the Dungeons & Dragons are Dungeons & Dragons. The differences between editions grew greater as the game progressed. Second edition was really just a recodification of first edition with some slight changes, but really was just like, here's all the stuff we've added on to the game. Let's codify it and present it in a nicer format. Third edition was a big leap. 3.5 made some significant changes, and fourth edition in some ways was a very radical departure of what had come before. So that was kind of their design goals. They really wanted to get in and make something that felt like D&D to everyone. And one of the things I've really noticed about Next, when it was called Next and not fifth edition, during the playtest, most people identified Next as being closest to their favorite edition, just from the people I talked with. Regardless of what edition that was. I really, reading through the rules, I got done with it and was like, wow, there's a lot of second edition in this game. And Christopher, the co-GM of our next game, was like, man, this really feels like the first time I read the third edition or 3.5 book. And if you dig, I mean, you don't have to scratch very hard at Next to see some of the fourth edition resource mentalities coming through, especially when you look at the spellcasting classes. So it's here. It's been a long open playtest. As Nick said, we've all, we're not special. They did an open playtest, but we did a lot of playtesting of Next. And there's a lot different. from the playtest. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through, again, the products that are available, kind of tell you what the advantages and disadvantages of each, and then end with the Horde of the Dragon Queen, which is the first adventure for D&D 5th edition that I really enjoyed. So we'll start off with the basic set, or the starter set. Let's
start with the starter.
We'll start with the starter set. So the starter set's $20. In it, you're going to get a set of dice, five characters that are statted out from 1 to 5, so you're going to be able to, you know, level them up. It's designed as an intro product, really to take you from 1st to 5th level. You'll have a basic character sheet that you can then photocopy. And the two books are the starter set rules, which they managed to boil down to 32 pages, and then a 64-page adventure. Forgotten Realms seems to be the default setting, or at least the first setting they're pushing through. So the adventure of the Lost Mines of Phandelver takes place in the Forgotten Realms. So, Nick, you haven't looked through this product aside from a cursory glance, correct?
Correct. I flipped through it a little bit.
So for these reviews, we're not really going to get into the mechanics, and that's really going to be when we talk about the basic rules. You'll see why. But the starter set is high quality. It's all staple-bound stuff, but the paper is nice and glossy. It's got some really great artwork in it. One of the things that really stood out to me was, one, the diversity of races and gender in the art, and then the inclusiveness of the language. It's really draws you in. The starter set is designed for someone either who is tempted to see kind of what Dungeons & Dragons is about, or for new gamers. I've heard a couple of players in my gaming group who were very disappointed that things like attacks of opportunity or more complex movement rules weren't put in this box set. And you got to realize, this is not designed for even a casual gamer. This is really designed as a starting point for a new gamer.
It's like an appetizer.
Yes. You have an adventure, you have streamlined rules, you have the first 5 levels of cleric, wizard, 2 types of fighters, and rogue. So you got all your bases covered. And that's it. You don't even have character creation rules in here. This is a pre-gen grab and go. The one big disappointment for me was, I'm used to the Pathfinder starter box. When you open, you got minis and you got maps, and it's, you know, a pretty large box, but it's filled. The starter set box looks filled, yet half of it is just a box spacer, which Nick pointed out as we were looking through it, does seem to be right about the same size as a player's handbook. I don't know whether that was on purpose, like, here, start with the starter set and then get the player's handbook and you can just store everything in there at once, but...
So the spacer isn't permanent.
The spacer isn't permanent.
Pull it out and put other stuff.
Yeah, it's just a little deceptive, yeah. So keep that in mind. From a starter box perspective, as I said, it does a pretty good job of introducing you to the game. I do tend to agree with some of the people's reviews that I've read online that, like most games, reading about it is going to cause a very stumbly start for the GM. It really would still help to have somebody there. But the adventure does hold your hand as the GM. The Lost Mines of Phandelver it's a very Forgotten Realms-y start to a game. If you are familiar with any of the Forgotten Realms through ancillary products, the books, the novels, the video games, it's going to feel like Forgotten Realms.
So I'm hearing you correctly that if someone has never played Dungeons & Dragons before, either as a player or as a GM, this would be a good resource to start with. It's not that expensive, and you can start out, play it, see how it goes. It's cheaper than a lot of board games. But if you are familiar with Dungeons & Dragons, or you've been playing for a while in whatever edition it is, it may not be needed.
Right. I would not start here if you were at all familiar with role-playing games or Dungeons & Dragons. If you're just wanting to stick your toe in and see what it's like, I would say start with the basic set. So, Nick, why don't you tell us about the basic rules?
The basic rules is a free PDF that you can download from Wizards of the Coast's website. And it's probably about 100 pages long, I'd guess, that goes a little bit more in-depth into how to play the game. There are character creation rules in there. There are races in there. There are classes in there. There are combat rules in there and all that sort of stuff. It's not as in-depth as what you would find in the player's handbook. It's all in black and white. But it is a good bridge between the starter kit and actually buying all of the resources out there. So maybe, you know, the starter being a good tool that if you just want to try it, that'd be a good one to start with, because it does give you an adventure and all that kind of stuff to go through. But then if you're kind of on the edge about whether or not you want to buy into this fifth edition, or if you want to stick with what you have, the basic would be a good thing to download and read through and kind of wet your whistle for what to expect with it.
Right. And the nice thing is it goes levels 1 to 20. And as the Monster Manual and Dungeon Master's Guide comes out, they will be updating the rules to include specific portions from those books. However, it is the basic set. So you're only going to get Wizard, Fighter, Cleric, and Rogue. One build for each. You don't have all of the options that you do. And you're only going to get Halflings, Humans, Dwarves, and Elves. So enough for your very typical Dungeons & Dragons party. And one of the things that the designers have said is that with the basic rules, you're going to be able to play for as long as you want, as many games as you want. It is a complete rule set. It is just a lighter version of the rule set than the full 5e Player's Handbook.
Yeah, we have been playing the Dungeons & Dragons next playtest version of the rules. And so when the basic became available, I downloaded it and read it through, and it kind of was, in my mind, processing through what's different between what I've been playing in the next playtest versus what's in the basic. And there were some differences, but I felt like, you know, as someone who wants to play but maybe doesn't have the cash to throw out into this, or someone who's maybe invested in previous editions heavily and aren't quite sure if they want to shell out the money for a new edition, I felt like this would be a good, like I said earlier, a good way to wet your whistle and kind of get a flavor for what you can expect with everything else. I think, and if you're a GM who's introducing players to the game, this is going to cover a fair amount of their options, a fair amount of the rules that they would need to play it.
Right.
It's not all-inclusive. There are combat maneuvers. There are, you know, additional races, additional classes, and additional options for each of those that are in the player's handbook that are not in the basic set. But like I said, I felt like, trying to put a percentage on it, I'd say maybe like 60 to 70% of what you would need, or what might be covered in the real key parts of the player's handbook, would be at least broached in the basic.
Right. So the player's handbook is $50. And as Nick said, the basic rules are 100 pages. The player's handbook is 300. So about a third of the rule book is available online. So what do you get when you upgrade for $50?
You get a fantastic book. I have to admit that when I got my hands on this, I immediately fell in love with it. I've heard of some people who have complaints about even the cover artwork, but I love it. The back cover, half of it is glossy and half of it is matte, or a matte finish. So I feel like it makes it, I don't know, easier to hold. And as I was flipping through the book and reading through it, I felt like my fingers were gripping the mat just a little bit better than the glossy. I thought that was a nice touch, just from, you know, judging a book by the cover.
Yeah.
I really like the cover. But as James said, there are, you know, over 300 pages of content here. A lot of really, really beautiful artwork. I felt like the writing of the content was very well done.
Okay.
I did not feel, as I was reading through it, and as someone who's relatively new to Dungeons & Dragons, I did not feel like I needed to have read anything else prior to this. I did not feel like they were, you know, speaking to me in condescending terms or anything like that. Like, well, you should have bought 4th edition and then you would know this. No, I felt like I could come into this as a totally new player and get the feel for what all of the previous editions had to offer in a well-wrapped container.
Nice. You had a full 9 races with the player's handbook, including sub-races. Instead of just the 4 basic classes and the basic rules, we have 12 classes, including some familiar favorites from later editions like the Sorcerer and the Warlock. I even think I saw the Chaos or the Wild Magic table in here, again, which feels very second edition-y to me.
And again, each one of those races and each one of those classes have options to choose from that are not present in the basic.
Right.
The basic has some, but not all of them. And all of them are presented in the player's handbook.
They do a great job of walking you through. And again, as Nick said, the book is gorgeous. And if you've ever had an issue with some of the, I will say, more second and early third edition art, that's not in here. Neither is the over-the-top, more anime-style art that favored fourth edition. This feels like a good blend, a very inclusive blend of art.
I, you know, as I was going through this, JM had asked me earlier what was my favorite part of the book, and I have to say the artwork. Again, I have not experienced previous editions before, so this is definitely as a new person coming into this. But the artwork really, for me, captured my imagination, captured my attention, really drew me into the story, especially the full-page pieces where there's mm-hmm. multiple players or multiple characters depicted there doing something. I just flipped open the book to page 126, and there's a looks like a tavern brawl breaking out between several different races, several different classes. And I'm like, you know, I can imagine starting out an adventure in a brawl, and you all get, you know, you all participate in the fight and all get thrown into the local jail. And that's where you start out. And that's how you get pulled together. And so, you know, there are a lot of art in here where, like I said, it just makes me want to jump in there and figure out what's going on. What's happening here? I want to play in that.
Yeah, it's very evocative.
Yeah. There's a couple pieces of artwork that I do not like. The depiction of the halfling, for instance, I have to admit that's like, I saw that and I was like, ugh. I shuddered. But for the most part, the poor pieces are very few and far between. And I felt that, I don't want to go on too much about the artwork, but as far as the overall layout of the book, the balance between text and pictures, I felt like they did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
There's a couple sections where, you know, you have two or three pages of just text, but for the most part, you can flip open to any page and there's going to be some artwork presented there. Even if it's just a picture of an axe or some coins or something like that.
Something to break the text up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So as somebody who's played a little bit of fourth, you played Pathfinder once or twice. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on fifth? Do you feel like they succeeded in their design goals to make a game that truly feels like Dungeons & Dragons?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that if I was to, you know, in the future, someone was to ask me, what is Dungeons & Dragons? Because I don't have a lot of previous experience, this is what I'm going to be drawing from. Right. And in my understanding of what Dungeons & Dragons is, from my limited experience, I think this encapsulates it very well.
Yeah. I would say if you are at all curious about it, check it out. Mike Merles and the rest of the design team at Wizards did a great job, in my opinion, of boiling 40 years of D&D down to its essentials and making it available to us. I think this is going to be a great platform for gaming going forward. And I hope their other design goal of this being the last rules update for a very, very long time holds true.
Yeah, as I read through this, you know, as a player, there were a couple of pieces that that I found were missing in that I had used them either in the next playtest or I have used them in Pathfinder and things like that. I mean, one very simple thing is the charge movement, being mm-hmm. able to do, you know, half distance and attack. That's not present here.
Okay.
And I think they eliminated that from the fifth edition rule set.
Sure.
It wasn't, you can move twice. You could do a double movement. So I think that's an example where you can easily make a house rule for that. And that type of movement or that type of combat maneuver is present in other games.
Well, and that brings up a really good point. The basic and even this player's handbook are designed to be the distillation of Dungeons & Dragons. And according to what the design team has said in the past, there will be additional books that are coming out that if you want to play a more third edition game, get this supplemental book. If you want to play a more fourth edition game, I don't know if that still holds true, but that was one of the things they were talking about. They are talking about expanding the rules to make it easier to play your version of Dungeons & Dragons.
That makes sense. And I can see them coming out, too, if they wanted to introduce additional races or additional classes or even additional options that they would be able to do that on a smaller scale.
I will say my favorite thing about the new rule set is the return of the Great Wheel. I'm a huge Planescape fan, and just to see the Wheel of the Planes brought back as cosmology, but also to see the 4th edition design with the Feywild and the Shadowfell, It was interesting to see all of those in the same book. Here's hoping that we get a 5th edition Planescape book. So the last product that's available for Dungeons & Dragons currently is the Horde of the Dragon Queen. It's the first half of Tyranny of Dragons, and I find most interesting that it is not actually made by Dungeons & Dragons. It was done by Kobold Press, who do like the Midgard books, Deep Magic for Pathfinder. Wolfgang Bauer is a familiar name to anybody who has played in previous editions of Dungeons & Dragons, specifically Planescape in 2nd edition. So what is Tyranny of Dragons? It's a two-part book, and from what I understand, the two books will take you through 15th level. So
wow,
well over three quarters of the way through the entirety of the game. The first book takes you to 7th or 8th. So, I mean, there's a lot of information in here. They also released the book with no monster statistics and no encounter stat blocks. So you can go online and download them. You can, however, read through The Horde of the Dragon Queen, the first part of it, and it has more information because there's no stat blocks. And two, you can use this for any gaming system, really. I was reading through this going, well, this is how I played in 13th Age. And that's something we'll touch on later. The basic premise of Tyranny of Dragons, for those of you who are familiar with the Forgotten Realms and Dungeons & Dragons lore, the Cult of the Dragon is attempting to... Hold on, let me see if there's any... Yep. All right. So this is on the back of the book. This is not a spoiler, but if you don't want to know about it, stop listening right now.
And don't read the back of the book.
And don't read the back of the cover. In fact, just don't pick this up unless you're planning on running it. The Cult of the Dragon, which for years has been making undead Draco Liches in the Forgotten Realms, suddenly comes up with a new plan, and they are trying to release Tiamat, the evil dragon goddess, onto the Forgotten Realms. She's been trapped in the abyss, and this two-part adventure is really about your players discovering this plot and then stopping it. And in the first part, it's a 96-page book, 8 episodes, and it covers the first 7 levels of the campaign, or of a campaign. So Horde of the Dragon Queen, again, is the first part of the two-part Tyranny of Dragons. It runs you $30, but again, it's entirely adventure. There are no encounter blocks. We will put the link to the Tyranny of Dragons stat blocks in the show notes. So Nick, as the newer to role-playing member of this show, what are your final thoughts on 5th edition, and what would you rate it?
My final thoughts would be that I really liked what I read. JM had asked me earlier to think about, you know, would I rather play Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition or 13th Age? And that was a really hard decision for me because I like both of them so much. And I feel like what Wizards of the Coast has done with Dungeons & Dragons is admirable. For me, I came down on 13th Age on that one, primarily because 13th Age seems to be so narrative focused, story driven, and that's what I love about the role playing games that I've been involved in. That captures me. Some people it's the mechanics of it, and for me it's more of the narrative, and that's where I would fall on that decision. Personally, I would give it a 5 white dragon rating. RPGGeek.com gave the average rating is a 9 out of 10. So seems like most people who buy it are very pleased with what they get. What about you?
I kind of come to the same conclusion. If I did not have, for me, it's 13th Age on one end of the spectrum and Adventure Conquer King on the other end of the spectrum, 5th edition would be exactly what I'm looking for. It kind of splits the difference between the two. The rule set is fantastic. The Dungeon Master's Guide, which comes out in November, apparently will have chapters on how to update 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th edition adventures to 5th edition, which is just amazing to me. But I'm so heavily invested in 13th Age and Axe, I don't really need another D20 game. If something were to happen and Axe and 13th Age suddenly were retroactively erased from the timeline, 5th edition would be the game that I would go to. The art's great. I love the language that they use to write it. I love the inclusiveness, not just culturally, if you will, and some of the different subcultures that are involved in gaming, but also the additions, the fact that they're really trying to bring people back together. But for me, 13th Age, the mechanics, the narrative, even just the high fantasy feel of 13th Age really kind of does it for me. I still would give 5th edition 5 white dragons as well. I think that over these last couple of years of playtests, Wizards of the Coast has put out a fantastic game, and if you are looking for a game that truly feels like Dungeons & Dragons, for the first time in a long time, I think Dungeons & Dragons is the game that you're looking for.
Nice.
Yeah.
So where can we find it?
Well, you can find it pretty much in any game store worthy of the title, because it is Dungeons & Dragons, so it's kind of the flagship game. You can also look for it at petriesgames.com. So a special thanks to Cameron and the crew at Petri's for sponsoring this episode and sponsoring this review.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.